We continue the shiur in Gemara. Gemara says, based on the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos,
that there were
a number of miracles that were
done to the Jews in Mitzrayim, Egypt.
Also, there were miracles done at the Kriyas Yamsuf,
dividing of the waters of the Red Sea. It wasn't just the dividing of the waters. There were a number of other miracles that took place. We point out just one of them mentioned here as an interesting sidelight. The Pasuk says, reference to the miracle at the sea, Mincha Hashem Nadori Bakayach, Mincha Hashem Tiratzayev. Your right hand Hashem Kaviyacho is filled with power. Your right hand Hashem smashes the enemy. Smashes or smashed the enemy. Egyptians at the Red Sea. This is one of the miracles that happened at the Red Sea. Kaviyacho Hashem destroyed, smashed, pulverized the enemy completely. So here, the Mefarshim ask a kasha. Interesting question. We know always that we are never allowed to use physical terms when speaking about Hashem. You cannot say a physical part of body in reference to Hashem. Why then do we speak about the eyes of Hashem that see all, the ears of Hashem that hear? This refers to the Sfidos. Sfidos, each one of the Sfidos represents or is represented by a certain part of the body to enlighten us. We use that as an enlightening term. So therefore, when we speak about the right and the left, this always means simply the midah of chesed, the right side is chesed, kindness, the left side is gevurah, din, harshness, punishment. Here the kasha is, we speak about Hashem, the power of Hashem, it's gevurah, power. Power of Hashem that smashes the enemy, this is din, harshness. And why doesn't it say the left? It says Yimincha Hashem. If it would say, Yodcha Hashem, your hand, you would take it for granted. That means the left hand. Meaning the left side, the left sfida, din. Here it says explicitly the right side, which is chesed. Chesed destroys. Chesed is kindness. The Mefarshim answer, we find that the Gemara says that in Gan Eden and in Gehenna, the pleasures of Gan Eden are such that it's impossible for the human being to be able to absorb that much pleasure. It's too much. The fires of Gehenna are such that it's impossible for a human being to be able to tolerate it. So what happens? In Gehenna, they give extra strength to Adasha, the soul of Adasha, to be able to tolerate the pain for whatever length of time the person is supposed to suffer in Gehenna. In Gan Eden, too, therefore, it is necessary for a tzaddik to receive extra strength, be able to take, to absorb the goodness, the happiness, the bliss, the joy of Gan Eden. Because if the person could not take that, he could be destroyed even by that goodness. He could be drowned by a flood of goodness. So therefore, in Gan Eden, the tzaddik is given added strength to be able to tolerate and to absorb all the goodness and pleasures of Gan Eden. Otherwise, the tzaddik, a Jew, could not enjoy Gan Eden because he could actually be destroyed by the tremendous power of goodness in Gan Eden. Here too, kasha was, how can we say that the right hand of Hashem, Kaviyachol, the right hand of Hashem, smashed the enemy? Right is chesed. The answer is that, of course, the right is chesed. Chesed is kindness. Chesed is goodness. When this chesed is given to the Jews, Hashem, along with this chesed, coupled with it, gives the Jews the power to receive, power of receiving this chesed. What smashed and destroyed the Egyptians? Hashem gave them the chesed without the power to absorb it. So it was too much. You have a shower of, let's say, gold coins or gold bullion. Gold bullion, 1,000 pieces of solid gold bullion. Tremendous wealth. But if you get a shower of that right on the head, that gold bullion wouldn't do the recipient any good at all. So here there was so much chesed given to the Egyptians, and yet they were destroyed by it. Yet they were destroyed because they were not given the strength to be able to receive this chesed. This is what the Mefarshim say. It is noteworthy. It's strange that the Mefarshim do not go to the source to find out the answer to this question. Because this question is posed also to Moshe Rabbeinu, Shimon Yechoy is all in Zayde Kodesh. The question is asked in the Zayde Kodesh. How do you have Yimincha Hashem Tinat Zayev if Yimin is Chesed? Should have been Smile. Lady Kodesh says very simply, Kaviyochel again. Let's remember that. We use terms that are not allowed to be used, but we have to say it, L'shabed es oizen, because we couldn't understand unless we use these physical terms, but we don't mean them physically. Everything is spiritual. Again, Kaviyochel, the right is always stronger or superior to the left, in all cases. That's why in a Torah, in every mitzvah it says, do it with your right hand. Do it with your superior hand. If a person, for example, is a lefty, so he uses his left hand because that's his right. That's his superior hand. But normally, in the case of a normal person, where his right hand is his favored hand, that right hand is better, it is stronger, it is superior. So therefore, when we speak about Yemincha Hashem, we're speaking about the right which is superior, Kaviyochel, stronger and superior. So Zayde Kodesh says that there are two sides. There is good and there is harshness. There is chesed and there is din. To the Jews, Hashem gives them the chesed. With which hand? With the right. The yamin is chesed to the Jews. So that the Jews receive from Hashem a greater measure. The measure of chesed, of kindness, of toiv, is greater than the measure of einish, of punishment. Because good Hashem gives with his right, and punishment he gives with his left. The left is weaker. The right is stronger. So always the good is greater, stronger, and more in volume than the punishment and the harshness. Ad goyim b'havdil, Hashem deals with them exactly the opposite. Ad goyim, Hashem gives them, if he wants to give them good, if he wants to give them reward, he gives them the left, with the left hand, the weakest side. If he wants to punish them, he punishes them with the strongest side, the right hand. Therefore, it says, for instance, Zayde Kodesh says, V'haremez is ger tzedek. Tzedek is smile. Tzedek is din. Ger, to a goy who's converting, tzedek. He receives the goodness, the kindness, with the left side. However, in the case of punishment to a goy, yimincha Hashem tenatzayev. Hashem punishes the goyim with the strongest side, which is chesed for a tzedek, becomes din for the goyim. Of course, that we can understand, because this fits and this coincides very much with the simple answer given the Zayde Kodesh to the Kasha about Chesed Kale. Kale is Chesed, the name Kale. And we find the Pasuk says Chesed Kale, Kale is Chesed, and also we find that Kale Zayin, that Kale is also Din. So Zayde Kodesh answers, how do you have a contradiction there? Zayde Kodesh answers that, of course, the Kale is used as chesed to tzaddikim. With kale, Hashem rewards tzaddikim. Because what do tzaddikim do? When there is din, there is harshness coming from heaven, they see to it that the harshness, the charin af, the anger of Hashem, becomes subdued. They daven and they remove the anger of Hashem, they bring only peace and kindness to the world. Because they do that, therefore this is the chesed kale. Them kale is chesed. Whereas the shoyim, even when there is goodness and kindness and ahava to the world, they show him with their sins, a mahapech, they twist and turn, convert this kindness to din, to harshness. For them, it's kel zayin. So here too, the yamin, which is chesed, the samael, which is din, is only to tzaddikim, which means only to the Jews. But to the goyim Hashem uses the yamin, right side, the strongest side, generally, chesed, which is right, the stronger, Hashem uses that for din, for harshness. Therefore, yimincha Hashem tenatzayev. Right hand Hashem, right, your chesed will smash the enemy. Because Hashem uses that right, stronger one against the enemy, the Jews. This is the Tetzitz of the Zayde Kodesh. We gave you both Terutzim and Mefoshim and the Zayde Kodesh, and of course, it's good to know all of them. The Gemara speaks further about, here we're dealing with items that come in tens. 10 statements that created the world, 10 commandments, 10 generations. The Gemara says now, note that in the Tadak Desha, very interesting observation. For those who see the letters in the Tadak, there are four items. Each one of these four items corresponds to the number four, the four letters of Hashem's name, the four levels of the worlds, and so on. The four items in the Torah are, first, there are the letters in the Torah, the Osius. That you will see clearly. Open the Sefer Torah, you'll see the letters in the Torah. These letters correspond to the last letter of Hashem's name, the K, Yud-K, Vav-K, the last K, which is the Shem Bon, which represents the Elam Ha'asiyah, the slowest world. Just above that, we have the Tagim, the crowns that are on these letters. These crowns represent the letter Vav of Hashem's name, correspond to the Shem Mo, corresponding to the Elam HaYetzirah, the world of the angels. These two, note so far, these two are both completely silent. There is nothing, no sound at all. If you have, and this of course you see in the Sefer Torah, open the Sefer Torah, you'll see the letters and you'll see the crowns there. This you can see, which means that that is Vichsav. It is written in the Torah. These are written, it's Tedesh Miksav, it's written in the Sefer Torah, the letters and the crowns, but they are silent. It is impossible to read these letters. If you don't have vowels, the letters are like a body without a soul in it. It's immobile, it's lifeless. So the letters, even with the crowns, still have no life in them. When we go higher to the next two steps, next step is the Nekudais, the vowels. This corresponds to Bina, this corresponds to Shem Sog, this corresponds to the letter K, the first letter K of Hashem's name, K, this corresponds to the Elam HaBriah. But this you will not see in the Sefer Torah. This is not written in the Sefer Torah. The Chumash, of course, they wrote it in. But the Sefer Torah itself lacks Nekudas. The vowels are not there. Above the vowels, of course, with the vowels, there is now life. If you have vowels, you can read the letters. You can then pronounce the letters. We have vowels, you know exactly what the pronunciation of each letter is. You can only read it. It's a monotone, just read. But to add more to it, much more, to add a real tone, to add music to it, something much higher, Nagina, then we have the Tamim. Tamim, the trap. This corresponds to the highest, the Chachma, the letter Yud of Hashem's name, to the Shem Ayin Beis, to the Elam HaAtzilus. These are the Tamim, the musical notes. Now this is known. It's known, of course, to those who know it. But at least it's known. It's simple. It all fits into a perfect pattern. Gemara says there is something more. There's more than these four. Not only is there more, but it's actually in the Torah itself. Not something hidden like the kudos, the vowels, and the tamim, musical notes. You cannot see it in the Torah. There is something that's part of what is written in the Torah, and it could be seen. And these are the special dots. There are certain letters in the Torah that contain dots on them. And the Gemara says there are 10, exactly 10 places in the Torah where you have dots on a word. Either the whole word or one letter in that word is a dot in the Torah itself placed over it. It is not a vowel, it's not a musical note, it's just a dot representing some hidden thought, something which is taught to us with that dot or dots. 10 places in the Torah. The Gemara goes on to point out these 10 places. Before we take that, let's first point out something which Rav Nosson Zal says. An amazing observation by Rav Nosson Zal. Something that is so rich, it's simple, it's elementary. And yet it is not known even to advanced students, advanced Talmidei Chachamim. They don't realize this tie-in. Rav Nosson says that we speak about the Torah, the Pasuk Nirgon Mafrid Aluf, which means that when we say Torah, one who has Amunah, to him Torah means the written Torah, the Chumash, and the oral Torah, the Gemara. Anybody separates these two, he is a kefir be'ikar. He is an atheist who does not believe in Hashem, does not believe in the word of Hashem. He is a complete bekaitis, Chumano Islam. But one who has amunah in Hashem, amunah in the Torah, believes that both are one. They are inseparable. The written Torah, Torah Shvechsav, Torah Shvapeh are one, not two. But telachna shtei yachtav. Now, how do we see that? Rav Nosson says, look, we have an amazing case that we could show how these two are one and how a person demonstrates his amunah. Because throughout the Torah we find two items. There's Mikra and there is Meseda. Those learning Gemara should remember that. In fact, you had it in Marcus. You learned Masechta Marcus, if you recall, Yesh Eim LaMikra, Yesh Eim LaMeseda, or another term for it is Iksiv and Vikri, which means that in the Torah you'll find the word is written one way, that's the Iksiv, the letters are written one way, and the Kri, we read it differently. In Chumash, you'll find many times in small parentheses, Kri, read this word this way. It's printed one way, but read it differently. Change that to be read differently. Change that. They didn't erase the word from the Torah. In the Torah, the Ksiv means that it is written that way, but though it's written that way, we do not read that word the way it's written in the Torah. We read it according to the Kri. What is the Kri? According to the way Chachamim told us. Change the word and read as the Chachamim told us. Now, Torah Shebiksav means you're reading out of the Torah which is written. If you're going to change that, are you reading the word from the Torah? You're not. You're saying it by peh. You're saying it by heart. It's not written there. So where does the word come from that you are reading? It's not being read. It is being recited by heart because the Chachamim, the Torah Shebiksav, the Chachamim tell you, read this word differently. So by the Kri and the Ksiv, we see the combination of Teder Shebiksav and Teder Shebalpeh being united, the person fulfilling that mitzvah 100%. He's reading Teder Shebiksav and reading it the way it says in Teder Shebalpeh, according to the Kri. This is the emunah in combining both. Now, these nekudais, here it does not change the pronunciation of the word. These dots do not affect the way the word is pronounced at all. What then? They teach us something. They teach us something which is not written. The words say one thing, but there's an additional lesson taught to us. The Gemara tells us now these 10 different cases. We'll understand by these examples exactly what is meant by these dots. First case in the Torah is where Sarah said to Avram Avinu, they got into a rift about Hagar. Sarah was jealous of Hagar, the maid, and she wanted to expel her, throw her out of the house. So Sarah's words were, Yishpeit Hashem b'niyeh v'necha. She said to Avram Avinu, let Hashem judge between me and you. It's a harsh statement. Did she mean to say that let Hashem judge and one of us, the loser, should chas v'shalom be hurt? Of course not. Avram and Sarah were one and the same. Both tzaddikim and gemura. Yishpeit Hashem b'niyeh v'necha. There's a dot on top of the yud of v'necha, the second yud. Just a dot. The gemara says, well, that dot is like an eye. We had this topic before, just recently. An eye in hara. An evil eye. Evil eye meaning not literally evil, but an eye that damages. Sarah said, I look at Hagar with this harsh look. I give her this eye, and because of this eye, Hagar was pregnant. Because of the look that Sarah gave her, the look of jealousy, therefore, Hagar had a miscarriage. You see this, this extra dot is what teaches to us. We can understand this in the Psukim. In the Psukim we find Hagar was driven out of the house, and the Malach said to Hagar, go back, and you will become pregnant. Hina chora. She was pregnant. When she left, she was pregnant. They said, you will become pregnant. It means that her pregnancy had been terminated with a miscarriage. Miscarriage was caused, was due to the look of sorrow. She said, Yishpeit Hashem b'niyeh v'necha, let Hashem judge, let Hashem take up my honor and avenge my pain, my suffering because of this maid. The result was that Hagar had a miscarriage, and then she came back again. Of course, she gave birth to Yishmael. This dot, extra dot, teaches us this whole new concept, new idea, which we would not know otherwise. The fact that Hagar suffered a miscarriage due to the ayin look by Sarah. This is the first place in the Torah where we find this dot. Second place, the Gemara says, when Malachim came to visit Avram Avinu, famous three Malachim, so they said to him, Yimru a love. They said to him, Aye Sarah Ishtecha, where is your wife Sarah? The word a love three letters have dots on them. Aleph, Yud, and Vav. Which means, Ayah means where. Something special about this question we're going to ask, where. Why do they ask that question? What is their affair as to where Sarah is? Who asks questions about the host's wife? It's not even fitting to ask that question. So why did they ask this question? Lawrence says, this teaches us, that the purpose of asking the question was, the biggest mitzvah is to bring peace between husband and wife, to increase the ahava between husband and wife. And this they did. They said to Avraham Avinu, where is your wife Sarah? Did you notice that she is not here? She's not present at this get-together? Why isn't she present? Because she is such an isha tznua. She is so modest. She is so reserved. She has such snias that she refuses to show herself in the presence of other men. Look at the tzaddikis that you have married. This is what these dots on the word Elov teach us. Third case, story of Lot. Story of Lot and his two daughters follow immediately afterwards, the way it's written in the Torah. After Lot was saved from the overturned city of Sidon, it says that Lot had an affair with his two daughters. The elder daughter first. She gave Lot heavy wine to drink till he wasn't sober enough to understand what was going on. He wasn't conscious. And then she had relations with him. And she gave birth to a son. Then the next night, the second daughter did the same. She too gave birth to a son. These two became very famous Arab nations. The Gemara says, it says, Lo Yoda, and Lot was not aware, b'shichva uvekuma. He was completely unaware of the time that she came to him or the time that she left him, his oldest daughter. Unaware. Yet there is a dot on top of the letter, one letter in the word of Ikuma, top of the Vav. What does that dot teach us? It teaches us that Lot was excused. Fine. It was unintentional. He was drunk. Completely drunk. Shikusai shel Lot. He was completely unconscious. He could not be blamed for this act of having incest relations with his daughters. His daughters? No, with his daughter. This teaches us that the first night he was innocent, but the second night he was guilty because he was not aware at the first night when he got up. After the first night was over, he realized what happened. It was his fault to allow himself to get drunk again the second night. Even though he was unconscious the second night too, still he was guilty. He was judged guilty because he had learned his lesson from the first night. He should have known to beware of what could happen to him the second night. So here the Gemara charges him with this guilt. Guilt the second night. Because he should have taken precautions not to let this happen. Though he was unconscious at the time, he is still considered guilty of this act. The fourth case in the Torah we find that is when Yaakov and Esav met. Meeting between the two brothers, Yaakov and Esav, and there the pasuk says, Vayishokehu. Esav kissed Yaakov. Vayishokehu, you have six letters to that word. Every single letter has a dot on it. Beginning to end, there are dots on those letters. The Gemara says, what do those dots teach us? This Vayisha Kehu was the greatest lie of all. This kiss by Esav was not a friendly one at all. It was a false, completely false, misrepresenting his true intentions, his true feelings. Esav hated Yaakov. He would much rather have killed him rather than kiss him. But what happened? It says after Vayivku, they both cried. Why did they both cry? Because in truth, the Gemara says, where did Esav kiss Yaakov? Well, where does a vampire kiss? On the throat. Esav kissed Yaakov on the throat, tried to dig his teeth into Yaakov Avinu's throat, like a vampire, and to throttle him, choke him, to kill him. He cut his simonim in the throat, at least to sever his jugular vein with his teeth. However, what happened? It says they both cried. Yaakov Avinu cried, over his throat. The fact that Esau kissed him not honestly, but his throat had changed to marble by miracle. Esau cried over his teeth. He tried to bite into the marble, every one of his teeth broke. So after this false kiss, Esau cried very bitterly, not because of joy in seeing Yaakov, but over the sadness of losing his teeth, getting his teeth knocked out. This is what the dots on the word Yishakehu teach us. Following this, we come to the fifth case, where the brothers of Yosef HaTzadik, Ilcho Echov Lidois Estzun, the brothers went to herd the cattle. They went to herd the cattle, take care of the cattle. On the word S, there's one dot. What does that dot teach us? That their real intentions were not to go tend the cattle at all. Their intentions were to meet together, the private rendezvous, there to eat. Eat means to eat together, to join as one unit, and to decide the fate of their brother Yosef HaTzadik. Outrid themselves of Yosef HaTzadik. This is what the letter with the dot on it teaches us. Further, we have the sixth case. We have the pasuk Shepokad Meshevi Aharon, and counting the Levium, the pasuk Meshevi Aharon, by Meshe Rabbeinu Aharon Kohen, and the word the Aharon has a dot on the letters Aharon. What do these dots teach us? That when the Torah gives us the sum, the sum total of all the Levium living at that time, this excluded Aharon HaKohen. The number you have there does not include Aharon HaKohen. Whatever number you have, add one, you get the sum total. Because he was greater than all the others, therefore he was listed separately. That's what these dots, like crowns on Aharon HaKohen, showing that he was the head of the entire tribe. Seventh case, we come to the pasuk that deals with Pesach Sheni. You recall that the din says, the Torah tells us that if a Jew was tamei during the bringing of the Korban Pesach for the holiday of Pesach, or even if he was not tamei, if he was unable to reach to get to the Beis HaMikdash with the Korban, there still was a possibility, a second chance was given to these two to bring their Korban Pesach on Pesach Sheni, 1 month later, Yudalad Iyar. Pasuk says, the person was Tomei, V'derech Rechoiko, he was Tomei or he was at a distance, then he is allowed a second chance. According to Rechoiko, the letter He has a dot. What does that dot teach us? Do not take that word distant literally. It doesn't mean that he's 100 miles away. Doesn't mean that he's so far away from the Beis HaMikdash that the distance makes it impossible for him. If he tried, he came even up to the yard of the Beis HaMikdash, but he could not get inside on time, he is still considered distant. It is not the distance of miles, of space, it's the distance in the actual being present in the Azara of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Chayko distant means one who was not there is automatically distant. Makes no difference if he's 1 foot away or if he's 100 miles away, it's exactly the same thing. Not in there, he is distant, and if this was an accident, he couldn't help it. He is given the second opportunity for Pesach Sheni. This is what the dot there teaches us. Now the eighth case is, we're speaking about the travels of the Jews in the desert from one city to the next. So they traveled Ad Nefach Asher Ad Medva. Ad Nefach Asher Ad Medva. These are names of cities, towns that the Jews passed through. All these towns, most of them, they had to do battle. So it says, on the word Asher, the letter Reish has a dot, which means, whenever you have, the general rules, whenever you have dots, on the letters of a word, if, let's say, the word has five letters, there are dots on three of those five letters, that means that we take the three letters and we drush is on those three, majority. If there's a dot on one letter, that means that there the drush is on the one which is mumayit. We subtract something. If there's a doubt on the majority of letters, that means this comes to add something. On the minority of letters, it means to subtract something. Here, we dashen, we subtract the letter which has a dot, asher, the resh has a dot. What are we left with? The word ish. So Gemara says this teaches us that when they get to this point, from here on, their tactics changed. Until now, when they go through these cities, the countries, lands they had to do battle with, they fought to the end. They wiped out, they burned, they razed the city to the ground, and they destroyed every living being. From here on in, though, only ash, only fire. They destroyed the people in the cities. They destroyed the people, but they were allowed, they were permitted to keep the spoils of war. Here on, they can actually keep the spoils, the cities they left. Only the people, the evil nations there that did battle with, they're the ones they destroyed. Until this time, they killed the people and also destroyed the cities. From here on, they just killed the enemy, but left the cities to remain. Ninth case in the Teda is Parshas Pinchas, where Teda says, speaking about the korbanos of the holidays, it says the korban of Chag HaSukkos, they're supposed to bring the mincha and the sochem pouring of the nesochem wine on the mizbeach. It says they brought porim, elim, and kvosim, oxen, which is the largest, rams, and lambs, sheep. Yisodain is a tenth of a measure. For the porim, they brought shlesha eslenim, the sochem, they poured three measures, 3/10 of a measure. The elam, the rams, they poured 2/10 of a measure. And the yisodain, yisodain like keves ha'achot. And yisodain for each keves. The word yisodain, you have a dot on the letter vav. Gemara says, this teaches us that they were not allowed to use the same keli, the same vessel to pour for a lamb as it did for a ram or an ox. An ox, they had to have a vessel that contained 3 esrenim. For a ram, one that contained 2 esrenim. For a kebis, for a sheep, for a lamb, they could use only a vessel, a keli, that contained 1 esrenim, which was the proper measure of nesochim for this korban. Finally, the 10th case is, Pasuk says in Histores Hashem Aleikenu, Enigleis Lonu Ulubonenu Adelon. Here we have the words Lonu Ulubonenu, both words are completely dotted. The word Ad, the Ayin also of Ad, is also dotted. A lot of dots tell us that this harsh warning took effect only after they had crossed the Yarden, the Jordan River. This harsh warning, strict reprimand, warning what would happen to them in case of going wrong, this warning applied to them. The punishment that was mentioned there applies only after they crossed the river Yarden, Jordan, then they would apply to them. These are the 10 cases in the Torah, exactly 10 cases, no more and no less, where you'll find dots added to the letters of the Torah. And the Gemara says, another observation, this case though, this is one exception, the case here is, the number is 11. Interesting point, mysterious point too. We know that he and she are two very important pronouns. He and she, we know we have today his and hers, and never the twain shall meet unless there's peace between them. But he and she are two important pronouns. There's no such thing as interchanging them. You don't have to change a he for a she. A he is a he and remains a he, and so does a she remain a she. It's for all time. There's no such thing as transplanting or altering what is meant by birth, by nature. We're not speaking about the Goyish exceptions. Now, this applies to everything. Note that in heaven too, the Zohar Kodesh says everything was created male and female. Kaviyochel, we have it to such an extent that even those things that are inorganic, even inorganic, are male and female. In Hebrew language, we have any item at all that's classified as male or female. A table, a chair, a bed, a closet, they also have genders. It's either male gender or female gender. Everything, and it's certainly the case of things that are alive, naturally is male and female. And if you go still further, even among angels, we have malachim that are zachar or nekeva. We have shedim v'shedais, spirits too. And then kaviyachol, the sfidais, also the sfidais too. There is tuchra and nukva. Now the Hebrew word for he in Hebrew that means male is hu, spelled he vav aleph. Hebrew word for she is the word he yud aleph. This is always no exception. If it's hu, that means male. If it's he yud aleph, with a chirik at that under the hay, that's female, means she. It's always that, never changed. Of course, case of the Polish, the Galicianer, who pronounce an U as E, it's very confusing because to them, everything is he. The U is pronounced E, so who is he and he is he, everything is he. They can't make mistakes. However, in actuality, of course, pronouncing it properly, we cannot say properly, of course, because that is wrong. The fact remains that the great tzaddikim of the past, some of the greatest tzaddikim of the past, spoke that way. Without a question of doubt, we know that the Benazal spoke with that accent. And U, he said, Bekeni, or instead of Boruch, they would say Burich. Burich, Atu, Hashem, Bekeni, Malachayla. So we cannot, of course, criticize that pronunciation. That's Kodesh Kodeshim. However, let's at least say that when a person pronounces the word, he must know what he's saying. If he's pronouncing the word meaning he or she, especially if one does pronounce the Vav, the Lupum, Hey Vav Aleph, pronounces it who, if he should, if the Balkeda who pronounces an U as an U, says it a Kenu, he should pronounce Hey Vav Aleph as he must be corrected because he's reading it incorrectly. Now the Gemara says, note that the word he for she is found exactly 11 times in the Torah. Hey Yud Aleph for she is found 11 times in the Torah. But you have the word she much more than 11 times. You have it hundreds of times, perhaps thousands, who knows. So many times in the Torah where you have the word she, which is pronounced he. Yet, the Gemara says, it is written, it is spelled in the Torah, Hey, Vav, Aleph. So when you look in the Torah Kedeshah, look in the Chumash, you'll see that the word is written, Hey, Vav, Aleph. You've got to look to see if this is the dot is a malupum, who, or the dot is under the hey, which makes it a he, a chirik, which makes it a he. You've got to notice very carefully. Because in the vast majority of cases in the Torah, vast all, except 11, the word is spelled Hey Vav Aleph, regardless whether it is male or female, regardless whether it's who or he. Therefore, the Balkeda does not have any clue when he sees this word. He must know, he must prepare himself to know whether this word is pronounced who or pronounced he. Unless he's a Galatiana, nothing to prepare. Everything goes smoothly, everything becomes he. Otherwise, he must be prepared to pronounce the word properly. In any event, of course, again, the who and the he both represent a very high item. The Zayde Kodesh goes into that in detail, different in who and he. The spelling, a lot of Seydus and Kabbalah on those words. But again, it's noteworthy to note that the number of times that the word he is written in the Torah is spelled he, Hayyud Aleph, is exactly 11 times. Now, these are the special items pointed out about the Torah Kedesh itself, the way the Torah is written, should be read, and of course this teaches us again the Emunah and the Torah Kedesh. Emunah in every word of the Torah, whatever we read, we must believe. Believe according to what we are taught by the Chachamim, by the Chazal, by the Tzaddikim. This is the Yesod of Emunah. We cannot separate the two. The word of a Tzaddik and the word of the Torah are one and the same. Tzaddikim are the ones who teach us the Torah, just as Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah Tzivolon Moshe. The Torah was taught to us by Moshe Rabbeinu, given by Hashem, but the messenger who brought it to us and taught it was Moshe Rabbeinu, which means that without the Tzaddik, we cannot ever receive or understand the Torah. We should be zecher to constantly accept this lesson.